It's midnight and Big Bear, you're listening to Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I am Tess Lynch. That was my son, Emmett, special guesting on this episode. I'm here in Los Angeles with
Molly Lambert, and in New York,
Emily Yoshida. Thank you, Emmett. I wish he was like our Don Pardo for our show.
That He's available. Amazing. He was going to take I really pushed him to take podcasting as an extracurricular, which bizarrely is offered at his school.
Oh, my God.
And he was like, no, thank you.
He's like, I'll just have some thoughts for a while before I'm forced to monetize them.
Or he's like, actually, you don't have to go to school for podcasting, Mom, as you know.
Yes. Which, correct. And he can get into the podcasting empire through nepotism, so it's okay.
Exactly.
Did you prove to him that you were a DJ through the photos of our last live event?
He still doesn't believe me.
Didn't you show him that you were like throwing your hands in the air like a cool DJ?
Molly took a lot of pictures of me where I look like I'm having so much fun.
I was
so nervous, but I really did have fun.
You had a great time. And we should plug.
We should, yeah,
now,
announce.
We're going to have another Night Call live event at Gold Diggers on February 5th.
Mark your calendars.
Last
I'm
going to
be there.
Also,
I'm going to be there in person.
Emily will be there
not
in person
in spirit.
This time. It's a Valentine's Night Call extravaganza.
I have an important question. Emily, last time you were DJ Ghost DJ because you weren't there, are you now going to come up with a new DJ name or are you still going to be DJ Ghost DJ?
Yeah, I got to figure out my actual DJ name because I've had several over the course of the years, but I feel like I need a fresh one for this run of my career. So I'll think about it. But, you know, when I used to play radio when I was a kid, because of course I did, my DJ name was Eminem, but it was before Eminem was a rapper.
Whoa.
So
Tess went through a lot of potential DJ names before.
So many.
Settling.
I love DJ Sinking Feeling. That's a great
DJ Sinking
name.
Feeling is great. What were some of the other ones?
It's personal to
DJ
me.
DJ Meat Sandwich.
Yeah, DJ Meat Sandwich was a close second. I was very distressed that DJ Clams Casino was taken.
That was the first thing you said was like Clams Casino. And I was like, that's already a producer. And you were like, what?
I was so upset. In my mind, I've been DJ Clams Casino for such a long time.
Oh, man.
But DJ Sinking Feeling, it's like modern and appropriate to the incarnation of me that exists now. So I'm DJ Sinking Feeling.
I'm DJ Fuck Y'all for life.
You've been DJ Fuck Y'all for a long time.
It's my true spirit.
It's your true self.
Speaking of my true self, I honored my true self by going on a weird trip to a museum when I was in the Bay Area this past week that I wanted to talk about with Night Call because it was such a Night Call place to be. Friend of the podcast, Sarah Johnson, told us about it. It's at Fisherman's Wharf. It's called the Musée Mécanique. And it is, I think, mostly a Playland memorabilia museum. I'm not sure if all this stuff comes directly from Playland, which was the weird old boardwalk arcade amusement park kind of thing at the pier in San Francisco at the Wharf. But this is just a bunch of weird old arcade machines, sort of like predating gaming even.
Do you know when they're from? Like 1906 or something?
No, I think they're from the 20s and 30s is my impression. There is one at the door that's the Laughing Sal, which is like a famous carnival thing that's just a terrifying, like, large animatronic sort of scary looking woman who just laughs, just like jiggles and laughs. It's kind of like the stuff from like Big.
Sideshow stuff. Coney Island vibes.
Definitely like the weird, dark underside of that stuff for sure. Like you walk in the museum and the first things you see are like, watch these zoetropes of the San Francisco fire and earthquake of 1906.
Wee.
It's like what they had instead of disaster movies then.
Yeah. And like some, you know, kind of salacious stuff, but less of that than I expected. And just more weird animatronic machines. The museum is free to go to, but everything costs like a quarter.
Right.
There's a couple machines that cost more than that that I didn't get into. But there's a lot of like weird dioramas where you put in a quarter and they kind of like move around a little bit. So there's one that's like just like people exploring with a form that just got invented, being like, oh, we can make anything into a weird mechanized miniature.
It's kind of like a flea circus, but a doll flea circus.
Well, there was one that was very flea circusy because it was a toothpick carnival. And my friend was saying you can like see that the inside of the glass hasn't been cleaned in like 100 years. There's definitely like you spend a little time in there, then you're like, I have to go outside. I have to be in the sunlight again.
So this is reminding me of the Pike Place Market. And I think a lot of the funkier stuff there is not there anymore. But there used to be a lot of that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, looking through some little goggles to see a little diorama and some like kind of fake freak show type peep show things where you could like look inside and see like a headless woman or something like that.
Okay, well, funny you should say that, because the thing that I found really scary and dystopian and reminded me that like it's always been dystopian is that they had these machines of executions that were doll executions.
That's crazy.
And there were four of them. Like, what? I saw the first one and I was like, this is crazy, but like in a weird way makes sense. And then I was like, oh, there's a bunch of these. I've never heard of this in my life. I watched one. It was like, watch this, like genuine old timey British execution with like a priest reading the last rites. And then it's like a castle. You put the quarter in and then like the doors open. You see this little like priest next to this guy who's like kneeling and he like reads the little last rites to him. And then a door opens in the basement and the guy gets hung. But it's a puppet.
Whoa.
It's a puppet. It's a doll. And I watched it. I was like, wow, I wish I hadn't watched that. And then later on, Johnny, my boyfriend, was like, oh, there's a guillotine. Let's do that one, too. And we watched it, and there was, like, a tiny little guillotine. It's, like, a little puppet execution. It's terrifying.
That's horrible.
But it's weird, because you're like, I spent money on this because I wanted to see, and then I saw, and then I couldn't unsee. But something about watching, like, dolls execute each other.
It's also bizarre, because who except us is that kind of museum catering to if it offers that, which, like, even was too much for you? I just imagine kids going in and being like, oh, cool, let me, no.
There's a lot of
weird kids like to get
stuff.
Creeped out by that stuff, though.
Yeah.
I think maybe we underestimate, because I certainly remember being kind of creeped out and made uncomfortable, but in, like, kind of fun way by
the
that
whole
kind of
Fisherman's Wharf. Like, it has that weird boardwalk, carny kind of atmosphere. Yeah. Even sometimes when they try to, like, sanitize and city walk places like that, there's just, like, such a undercurrent of hauntedness. And this museum is so super haunted, and you should go there because it's free. except if you spend money on seeing.
Yeah, you can go in, but you can't see anything unless you have a bunch of quarters.
You can go
They'll
in,
get
but
your quarters.
You can't.
Yeah, you can never
you can't
leave.
Check out. No, there is one machine. My friend Sarah put her hand in. There's this thing that was like a Roman, like, fortune-telling machines. And there was one that was like a Roman coin on the wall with a mouth. Mm-hmm. And my friend, like, put her hand in it. And I was like, I can't believe you're putting your hand in there. Like, it could just, like, chomp down on your hand.
Well, you had just seen the guillotine. You knew
That's
what you were in for.
That's also totally true.
Yeah.
Well, we love a haunted museum at Night Call. We're connoisseurs of a good
museum.
Haunt-a-sours.
This was very, actually, Museum on the Rock seeming.
Oh, House on the Rock?
House on the Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we've talked about it several times also with the Black Mirror episode. The Black Museum. I think we're a fan of the kind of homemade museum. And we wanted to induct a few special things near and dear to our heart into our own Night Call Museum as a special end of year treat for all of our listeners who've been with us for the almost year that we've been on the air. We're not quite ready for our first anniversary, but it's
somebody
it's coming.
Was tweeting recently where they were like, was this the same year that Paddington 2 came out? And I was like, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Because that was one of our first episodes.
That's crazy.
Like. And I was like, this has been the longest year in history, but we have
really
measured it in night calls.
At the same time, I feel like Paddington 2 came out yesterday. So it's like both feelings.
Well,
at
it's
the same
timeless,
time.
And I'm glad it's available as a Christmas treat now for everyone who didn't catch it the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody else was saying, like, did the movie I Feel Pretty come out this year? And I was like, yes, because Emily, you and I saw it together in Times Square. And I was, they were just like, how did all of these things happen this year? Like, anything feels ancient.
It's the end times, so time is stretching and contracting. But let's make our own museum while we can.
Yes.
Our Hall of Fame for Night Call.
Virtual for now, unless we get that big grant. we've picked a few things that we think fall into our Venn diagram of the things that we all enjoy, that we think all night callers enjoy, and just put them on a special shelf of the mind. So with that, this is the first ever Night Call Hall of Fame. So for our first inductee, Night Call is not a podcast that necessarily condones or promotes or endorses any particular diet. But I feel that over the last year, the three of us have all kind of come down on, at least with the agreement that we will not eat a certain creature anymore. Also just out of honor and respect for this creature. This creature is perhaps the most iconic of cephalopods, and it stalks the night sea, changing colors and adapting to its environment in a beautiful way. It is a monster that haunted my dreams, a sea monster that haunted my dreams from a very young age. So I will always have respect for this creature. They are also great viral stars. There are many good videos of this year's inductee getting into and out of jars, particularly. I think we have to honor that. And so this year, 2018, I would like to induct into the Night Call Hall of Fame octopi.
Also, they're probably aliens. You neglected to mention. I think that's why they are the most night call of all animals.
Yeah. They are aliens that swim among us.
Misunderstood, strange looking, probable aliens who like to collect things, have senses of humor, and you shouldn't eat them.
So I have been reading a bit about octopi or octopuses. Actually, in this book that I read that is by he's both a philosopher and a scuba diver. He refers to them as octopuses, so I don't know if octopi is incorrect in the scientific community. I like the way octopi sounds, so that's why I said that. But they, and also I was reading about this about raccoons also, which I feel like are maybe a runner-up or maybe next time for the Night Call Hall of Fame, raccoons. Their hands are like antenna, and octopi are like that too. Like most of the information they get about the world comes from their tentacles. That's why they're just like so active and they feel like they have minds of their own, is just because that's where so much of the brain activity is. Like they have neurons in their tentacles, which is cool. When you do see a video of a raccoon, they're like kind of feeling things out. They've kind of got this like, wah, wah, grabby, grabby thing. And it's apparently because they're getting information through their little raccoon hands.
I've started referring to them exclusively as trash cats.
Oh, yeah.
I endorse that name to be used more broadly.
I've heard trash pandas also.
Oh, interesting.
And I endorse both.
I'm a trash panda.
Yeah, I saw two really big raccoons cross the street. I think it was right after our last Night Call live event. It was very magical. They were like helping each other cross the street.
Do you guys have any particularly favorite octopi or ones, you know, they don't need to be famous, but maybe ones that you had an encounter with or watched a video of? Any to call out specifically?
I have a tragic thing that Molly, I think we've already talked about it. Molly sent us the saddest article in the world that I posted on the Night Callers Facebook group of like the mother octopus like cannibalizing herself. And that was, I'll never forget that. I wish I could. I wrote a short story once about an octopus that was rejected every place I submitted it. It's still, it still slaps.
I was going to go on a side tangent about cuttlefish, but I won't because they're not the same thing.
Cuttlefish are amazing too. I mean, we like all cephalopods. I think that's safe to say. They're okay by us.
But I feel like the reason I don't eat them isn't necessarily just because I respect them so much. It's also because I'm not into their texture for food.
Too rubbery.
Yeah. I mean, I've eaten calamari. Like, I do.
See, I'm not into the calamari.
Calamari squid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same.
They're different.
It's the same. It's different, but it's like
different,
the same
family. It's different, but they're tentacles.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Big year for tentacles, guys.
Really big year for tentacles.
Tentacles are only going to get bigger and bigger. So congratulations to octopi, octopuses, however you want to say it. You'll have a special place in the Night Call Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we will be happy to serve the octopi when they take over.
Not literally. We're not literally serving octopi.
No, not in like a to
how
serve
to serve
man.
Octopi.
Guys, we've discussed this this place a lot over the past year. It's a place. There are many of them, but it's always really the same place. It's always right where you expect it to be. And you always know that when there's nowhere else that feels like the right place for you, this place has its doors open. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the 24-hour diner. A dying breed.
Yay.
A dying breed.
I really thought you were going to say cheers.
No, see, I was, that's what I was trying to do. It is wherever. Nobody really knows your name. In fact,
that's a plus.
I don't want to go to a place where everyone knows my name because usually when I go to a diner, I'm just like getting away from some other.
Yeah.
I just want
the anonymity.
The cloak of fried.
Yeah.
Someone chimed in recently. We were talking about a 24-hour diner in Seekonk, Massachusetts. I think it was two listeners very generously reminded us of the name Bickford's.
How could we forget?
Bickford's. And we heard that it's been kind of redone and fancified and that it's kind of lost some of its charm. I don't care. If it's still 24 hours, and actually I'm not sure if it was actually 24 hours. Because Fred 62, for instance, Los Feliz 24, quote-unquote 24-hour diner, not
they're
actually
24. Oh, they're
no,
not?
I don't think so. I think they're closed at 4 until 7. They took a three-hour break,
I
believe.
I feel like a lot of diners that are supposedly 24 hours will also take a break if there's, like, no traffic at a certain point, which I
as
respect.
They should.
Yeah.
As long as you're kind. If you're almost 24 hours, I'll give it to you. Fatburger also, I think, closes at, like, 4. Bob's Big Boy, I believe, is the full 2-4.
Yeah, there's some. And there's a Norm's opening in the Valley that will be 24 hours, supposedly. Really great specials.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. There's like, last time I went there, there were all these seniors there to get the senior special. And my friend was like, this is the best argument for getting old I've ever seen. Like, this looks awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like senior specials are always the right amount of food, too.
I had the same experience last night when I tried to go to the local Italian restaurant at like 7 p.m. And they were like, we are all booked up. Sunday night at 7 p.m.? Are you kidding me?
But 7
Which
p.m.
One was
is
it?
Actually the prime.
Columbo's. Columbo's, the jazz club and Italian restaurant in Eagle Rock that we also would put on the Hall of Fame. If everyone had been there, which
I have not been there, but
I'm
curious.
You will.
You'll love it. It's like a David Lynch movie inside. It's like red velvet curtains, a weird painting of Al Pacino.
Oh, nice.
And a kind of, you know, like a loungy cabaret music vibe of local musicians.
Are 24-hour places really going away? Are they endangered? I personally don't have
well,
that
you
feeling,
live
but
in,
also,
you live in,
I live
the,
in
city
the city
that
never
sleeps.
And I was just at a 24-hour diner, even though it was the afternoon. I was not taking advantage of the 24 hours, but I do like the fact that even if it's not, you know, late at night, they'll still let you sit there forever and ever. So
that's
I write a lot.
Great.
Even in the city that never sleeps, things close at
night.
Do
you ever go to French Roast? Isn't that the 24-hour diner on the corner of 11th and 6th?
I don't. I've never been there before.
Is that a Connecticut muffin franchise?
It is. It's like a bougie 24-hour. It was like the place in college where you're roaming around and it's like 3 in the morning and you're like, let's all go. We're so drunk. Let's go eat some French onion soup.
And probably a big, terrible NYU
Wait, that's
hang.
So weird. There's a place like that in Manhattan Beach called The Kettle that I feel like is also like.
I think The Kettle's 24 hours,
it's
isn't
like,
it?
Like where they're like, it's 5 a.m. Wouldn't you like some hot onion soup with Gruyere melted on it?
In a way, yes, I would.
No,
but if
me
you've been
too.
Doing tequila shots, it's like, please do not get French onion soup. God. I mean, I think when Dupar's closed, I think that
R.I.P.
was
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Still one in the farmer's market.
Oh, whatever.
Right.
Whatever.
That one's like fake. I know that people don't respect that one.
I
but
mean,
I like that one.
Everyone, all of the like, you know, 70-year-old men who like really feel like they know L.A. will be like, no, that's the Dupars. That's the Dupars. They're just totally wrong. It was the Valley Dupars.
Last time I was there, I think we saw Ian Ziering.
Oh.
Steve Sanders from 90210.
Yeah.
And then I was like, who is that cool couple over there that are like very engrossed in each other? And then when they were leaving, I was like, it's Delta Burke and Gerald.
Oh
McNaney.
My God!
Whoa!
It was the peak,
amazing.
Peak Dupar.
Peak 818 experience.
Wow!
So at least glad to have that memory.
Yeah.
Everybody should pick one diner, their fave, in the realm of the 24-hour diner.
I guess Norm's. Norm's is the best.
I can't say Bickford's now because I haven't been since 2005, but I'm going to go ahead and time travel back to like 2003, 2004 and Bickford's it.
Bickford's.
Emily,
well,
about
if you guys aren't going to pick Waffle House, then I'm going to pick Waffle House.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it's been a second since I've actually been to one, because in Chapel Hill, where I most frequently am in the South now, there's a place that the locals consider superior to the Waffle House. But I do love a Waffle House.
But is that local place open 24 hours?
It is not. No.
Waffle House is the one place where you're like, the chain is probably just as good as the local place because it's a really good chain.
Right.
Kind of an underdog contender for the Hall of Fame. Although, Emily said, who doesn't like it? You know what I'm talking about. The moon. Guys, how cool
is
the
moon? I did
know
what you were talking about.
So fucking cool. I love the moon. God, I love the moon.
Who could argue against the moon?
The older I get, the more I believe in the powers of the moon. My mom, for the longest time, has been like, you seem a little high strung. Could it be the moon? And I was like, no, I don't think so. And now I'm like, well, I don't, maybe it was
Wouldn't
the moon.
Wouldn't it be nice if it was?
Yeah, I
My
know.
Favorite conspiracy theory that's not real is the like, well, your body's like 90% water. Isn't
so
it controlled by the moon tides?
You are the tide. It's true.
Much like astrology, you're like, wouldn't it be nice if there was a system that governed everything and things made sense.
A lot of calls, yeah. You know, there's stuff goes on, though, systematically with the moon. Like, there's more crimes and stuff. I have all the scientific evidence to back it up, clearly.
Sometimes, is there more crimes when the moon is bright or when there
when it's
is...
full. Or, it's full
really?
Moon fever, man.
That makes no sense, though, because that is when everyone can see you doing your crimes in the bright
but
moonlight.
But it's easier to see your crime.
Yeah, but do your crimes in the new moon, in the dead of night... trawling the night sea
like an octopus.
Yeah, do your crimes when there's no moon. So
or you could
no
be like
see.
If everyone else is also doing their crimes with the full moon, you want to do your crime, there's less cops, you know what I'm saying? Resources are spread thin, it's power in numbers.
Emily, where do you fall on the moon?
Does everybody know where their moon is in their chart?
No.
Speaking of astrology,
our math teacher in 10th grade did it for Tess and I, but I have forgotten.
That was a 12th grade math teacher, Molly.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. He did our, oh, right, he did our charts.
Bears
think my
mentioning.
Moon is in Scorpio.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I know, because the Yikes. Math teacher was like, well, that's why, you know, you're a Virgo, but you've got this, because I was, tried to lead a walk out in the class one time or something.
Shockingly.
The tyranny of your astrologer math teacher.
He was so
sounds like
nice.
The coolest math teacher
no,
of all
he was
time.
Just so nice that we like pushed him so around nice. As a class because he was such a nice dude and we were a bunch of senior
who were in remedial math, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, yeah.
It was remedial math.
Do you feel like you're more of the Horshack or the Vinnie Barbarino?
I think see, this bears on what we'll be talking about later of what roles we occupy. I have no objectivity about that math class.
You're
who
the,
would you?
You're the Vinnie Barbarino.
You think? Yeah. Okay, I'm kind of flattered.
I'm the
actually.
Horshack.
You are the Horshack. I did my my end of the year project on the echo boom of population, and it was just me being like, "See, all these people had babies, and then they went on to have babies. Look at that math.
There's
your math right there. Got an A." Anyway, the moon.
The moon.
I will say one note from the cinema about the moon. There are some good depictions of the moon in cinema going all the way back to the silent era. If there was one movie of the moon that I wish I could cut out from another movie and just enjoy on its own, it's the end of First Man, a movie that we will never discuss on this podcast
ever again. I will not see that movie, but
yeah.
I laughed very hard at Ira Madison's description of it when he was like, the reason like people don't like this movie is because it's just about like Ryan Gosling wants to fuck the moon.
That's accurate.
Well, I don't know about that, but the end of it, like, you know, especially on the big screen, is a very good case. Yeah, he fucks the moon. It's a good case for the wonders of the moon. It's very cool looking.
Don't you wish that movie weren't about Neil Armstrong or whoever it is, and it was just like an hour long,
just about the moon?
No, the real thing, and he doesn't want to fuck the moon. He wants to like throw a necklace into the moon, which is like stupid. It's like the entire scene of like, not to spoil First Man for people, but like the entire scene is this wonderful, like stately scene of grandeur on the moon, and then it becomes like, oh, because he's still sad about his daughter, and then that's the, like, and it kind of cuts the mood. But up until then, it's pretty rad.
Molly, you recently talked about the moon landing with a friend of the pod.
I will not reveal this friend's name because they do not want to be outed in public as a moon landing truther. But Steph Curry just said he doesn't believe in the moon landing. So I feel like it's a hot topic.
Our friend, yeah. Steph Curry.
Well, I feel like it's a hot topic. I feel like all the big conspiracies of history come back up. We talk about Room 237 a lot. They're basically just, their argument was like, if we can do it, why haven't we ever done it again?
Because it's really expensive.
But they're like, we went four times under like one president.
I think it's really expensive, and it's sort of like, once you've done it once, it's like, cool, we can. The whole point was to prove we could do it, and then after that, it's like, I don't know.
But what? Their argument was also that like it all took place under one president.
Did it? Didn't they go to the moon again? Not with Kennedy, or not with them? Not under Nixon?
I think they were saying that it happened all four times under Nixon. Can't prove this. Fact check. And they were like, what is Nixon known for? Lying about stuff.
Oh, I mean, to be fair, like it's not an unpopular conspiracy theory. So, yeah.
It's Schrodinger's moon.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you prove it? Especially if people don't just automatically believe video of things.
Which now we know you should not, so.
Yeah, well, now you shouldn't. Yeah. Should we fake a Mars landing?
I said we should fake it and get all the men to move there with Elon Musk.
Well, that's our plan. Don't tell them our plan. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you guys that I met somebody who was like a finalist for the Mars One thing?
Oh, yeah.
It's probably not happening anymore.
I also wouldn't wish humans on Mars.
I don't want to go to space at all.
I just feel like humans don't deserve another planet.
No.
Like,
and also, I mean, if you're going to go to a planet, shouldn't you go to one of the very Earth-like planets that have been discovered within the past, like, 2 years?
Yes.
Is that just too
Those
hard?
Those are too far away, yeah.
They're too far away.
We don't have faster than light. We don't have FTL.
I want to conserve our resources until we can, though. I don't really think, like, I think we're jumping the gun and being like, let's just see what we can do. Let's see if we can go to Mars. It's like, let's wait. Let's hold off.
So, like, hey, also, as a control, look at this other planet we fucked all the way up.
Exactly.
Maybe. And I saw some article that was like, colonizing Mars will like destroy any life that might exist on Mars and we'll just never know.
Right. I still think that the best option is to do like they did in WALL-E, where they have like the giant by and large ship where people go around in their little floating seats.
Oh,
and they're just
no,
on the
I
ship
hate that.
For a million years. I hate it, but at least you're not destroying other planets. At least you're in a vessel.
But
you've created your own planet to destroy.
They still make trash and throw it into space.
The space trash? Yeah. But I mean, it's a dim view of the future for sure. It's bad. But let's leave Mars alone.
So for our next nominee, I feel like there were many potential films and or television shows that we could have inducted into the Nightcall Hall of Fame. Many works of art that are near and dear to our heart, that speak to us, that embody our values. But I think that if we had to pick one, at least this time around, for this first year, we would go to one that kind of goes all the way back to the beginning of our show and our identity, who we feel we are within the podcast world. This is a film by a filmmaker that I think we all generally like, but I don't think we necessarily have, maybe we don't agree about all of his movies, except for this one. And it gives you a little bit of everything, namely three dudes, three of the best dudes, a alcoholic reporter, a cartoonist who turned detective, and a cop played by Mark Ruffalo, the best kind of cop, if you have to have one. this movie that we are inducting into this year's Night Call Hall of Fame is Zodiac.
Ooh.
Yay!
I fully forgot you were going to do Zodiac, and
you had no idea what she was talking
about. When you were talking about it, I was like, "This is the best description of Showgirls I've ever heard."
Next year,
because you had mentioned Paul Verhoeven as another possibility, or Eyes Wide Shut. Then I was like, "Is she describing Eyes Wide Shut?"
No,
like
it has to be Zodiac.
Zodiac.
Those are they orbit. They're
us, totems.
But this is at our center. Is Zodiac?
Yeah, Zodiac. Okay, so I was going to ask about this because I was trying to like put together some notes of what I was going to talk about in my opening, and I was thinking that I was like, I think in general I'm a Fincher fan, but I feel like we have some wildly varying opinions on the movies of his that we like. Like, I'm like probably not as big of a Gone Girl fan as I feel like you guys are, but I like it okay. It's just not my fave. And then I recently saw Girl with the Dragon Tattoo for the first time, and I was like, this movie is trash, and it makes me actually kind of lose respect for him.
I can't believe you didn't see it before.
I know.
The hacker.
Yeah.
The hacker. With
the industrial hacker in me didn't get it. It was too close to home.
We've talked
about it. Why would I just want to watch a movie about me?
I feel like we've talked about the Nordic noir boom a little bit.
Yeah.
I talked about The Snowman a bunch on my other podcast, Molly Sleazy Friends.
We gave you all the clues.
Yeah. We gave you all the clues. Just the Nordic noir boom when people were like green lighting all this stuff just because it was like, it's in the snow. People get murdered.
Yep.
There's that one Black Mirror.
But I feel like Zodiac is the best example of that kind of vibe of like the mystery that's sort of pointless because like what is life?
Well, that's why it's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that I feel like it is the pinnacle of that kind of mystery. And it's got that like, you know, shiny Fincher sheen, but it also has a real kind of like rough around the edges or kind of hangdog feel to it that is it's just like a perfect meal. It's got everything that you want in it.
It's like an action movie where the action is thinking really hard.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did I crack the code?
You did. You're right.
Yeah.
There's like
your mental.
You're right. Because like there's barely any actual like violence shown on screen.
Right. But you see everyone's thinking so hard. They're like sweating about their thinking.
Well, also the violence you do see is like so intense
right.
and scary. And
it
real.
Was also one of those first movies where I was like, there are so many CG effects in it, but they're not for action or violence. It's like the shot of the car going down the streets is like heavily digital.
He's like one of the only people I feel like who knows how to actually like use digital.
Yeah,
CGI.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is like if you can use it sparingly, like this is what nobody does. Like Jurassic Park, they used it sparingly.
Right.
That's what people forget. And then as soon as they had done it once, they were like, let's just do it all for everything. And then you never had practical effects again. But like the best thing is a blend.
Yeah.
That's my...
A fine blend.
My
Do we all feel
feeling.
Comfortable still with our assignments as far as the three dudes of Zodiac go?
I think we're pretty much...
I'm sitting here with notes on my lap. They're really in-depth notes about mostly diners. So I think I'm still Gray Smith. Do you guys still feel right?
I mean, I'd like to live on a houseboat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, would you though?
In theory.
And now you love Fisherman's Wharf, so you'll just like live on your houseboat and go to Fisherman's Wharf all the time in your San Francisco life.
By the weird. I think that's almost the Rockford Files. I think he's in a van in Malibu. Again. Great lifestyle. Wait. That reminds me.
Yeah.
I have another nominee.
Oh.
Speaking of murder things and things about detectives, I would like to nominate for the Night Call Hall of Fame Angela Lansbury.
Speak on it.
Angela Lansbury. She's only in really good things.
She was in Blue Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
She had like a long, you know, she started in this theater, I think.
She's 93 also, which is wild.
She's 93 and she's cool as hell. Murder, She Wrote is a great show that stands up well. Love a show about people underestimating somebody and then that person solves the murder every time. I like all those shows. I like Columbo. I like The Rockford Files. I love Murder, She Wrote. And we were talking about Bedknobs and Broomsticks recently.
So good.
That's, I think, why it came up. But
I've never
also
seen Bed Knobs and Broomsticks.
Oh my God, Emily!
Can I
especially now
confess
that you've seen Mary Poppins? It's like the good weird Mary Poppins where she's just openly a witch,
right? Well, so I don't want to spoil this for you guys too much, but I think by the time this episode comes out, the world will know. So I might as well get it out there. But did you know that Angela Lansbury is in Mary Poppins Returns?
No, is she a human teapot?
Basically. I mean, she may as well be. She's at the very end, and it's a part that's clearly was clearly written to be the Julie Andrews cameo. But I think, but then Julie Andrews didn't want to be in it because I, and the, like the line that she gave was like, oh, I didn't want to hog the spotlight from Emily Blunt. I wanted to let her have her moment. But I think she can't really sing anymore. Julie Andrews
can't. She doesn't
want
to ruin the illusion.
And this and the scene is a song. Like she sings a song. So instead we have Angela Lansbury there who's like, it doesn't make any sense, but it's totally not unwelcome.
Well,
it's
if you've
like,
seen
oh, great.
Bed Knobs and Broomsticks, it's almost like a sidequel to Mary Poppins. It's like the same kind of like weird Victoriana right. kind of the stuff that we were talking about with the weird museum I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Weird boardwalky stuff.
Mm-hmm. That I love to laugh vibe.
Yeah.
Just like being in a room with some old men and then laughing and going to the ceiling.
That part is so weird in Mary Poppins. I forgot about that.
I love
that.
It.
There's a part
it's
where
so
like the Knights of Armor come to life in Bed Knobs and Broomsticks
yes.
is the main thing I remember. But
it's
she's
also a very long movie.
It's long. She's a witch. It's weird.
It's a whole buffet.
And then she was also in The Manchurian Candidate, like not that far off from then.
Yeah.
Where she gives the greatest performance.
She's also
she had
great.
The range.
She's so she has like a warmth but also a depth that's really hard to
Well, that's the
get.
Thing. She has the warmth and then they use it against you in like Manchurian Candidate. It's like somebody who you love and trust being scary.
Yes, exactly.
So Angela Lansbury, we salute you. Welcome to the Night Call Hall of Fame. We will dedicate all of our eventual Night Call murder mystery novel series to you.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. If we ever get that Netflix deal.
When we all like, live
we have to, we demand that it stars Angela.
When Big Art, Big Art's going to give us that. That
big
grant money,
art.
big art
for our museum. Tess, you have another nominee.
I do. Now listen, this might make some people upset, but it shouldn't, because what I am about to nominate is less a singular thing and more a giant umbrella, if you, or maybe a giant bowl. A serving vessel that you can fill with whatever you need. And I think that that is really why this this nominee speaks to all of us. It is exactly what you want it to be. It's not what other people tell you it is. It belongs where it belongs. This sounds like a lot like my pitch for the diner, but it's a different thing. Guys, dipping sauces. Give it up for the dipping sauce. We've had some of our most heated conversations on this podcast about dipping sauces, most notably one I cannot mention that starts with an M.
Well, there are so many dipping sauces that involve that
this
something
the thing.
That
it's
you
a base.
Can't mention.
It's a base.
It's a base.
Yeah, you can mention
We're
going
to mention it. You fuck it. What? It's the end of the year. Well, I'm talking about mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to...
Is this really mayonnaise? Is this really mayonnaise in the Hall of
what
Fame?
What was that thing you're into? Like
That's
confrontational honesty?
Radical honesty.
Radical honesty time on Night Call. I just ate a pasta salad.
With mayonnaise. Mm-hmm.
With a dressing that definitely I realized as soon as I started eating it had some mayonnaise in it.
Yep.
Ate it anyway.
Pretty good.
You loved it.
I didn't
ate it
love
up.
It, but I didn't like...
Look at you. You loved it. Now you're trying to hide it. When you, when
no,
you
I would
didn't
tell
know.
You if I loved it. I would say if I had turned completely, but it was more just that I just want to be
you
clear.
Didn't. You didn't clear. Bomb.
I didn't bomb.
What I'm really getting behind, though, here is having a million different dipping sauces.
You said a variety.
A variety of dipping sauces. I'm just saying that I wanted to say mayonnaise out loud, which someone forbade us from doing. We obliged them, and now I'm rescinding that.
It's the holidays. We can do whatever we want.
You're the marvelous Mrs. Mayonnaise.
Which I would watch.
So this variety that you speak of,
I'm
trying to think of some real life examples. And the first one that comes to mind is the Tower of Onion Rings at a little establishment known as Birds.
I've ever had this onion ring tower, but I
are you
either.
Kidding?
I live very close to Birds and I have
I
never
know.
Had it.
I stand an onion ring tower. I thought you were going to say the Bloomin' Onion.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's similar concept, but it comes out like it's a dowel that's just a tower of onion rings stacked up on it. And I think they have three different dipping sauces. And one of them is like an aioli. One of them is like a barbecue sauce. And I forget what the other one was. But it's wonderful. And you kind of vary it up as you go down the tower. And who doesn't want that?
I love that. There used to be a like healthy fast food restaurant called, I believe, Tops with a Z.
I remember Tops with a Z. They had a condiment bar.
Well, that's the thing, is that Tops with a Z, it was like not as good as real fast. Like the food that it was trying to improve on, it did not succeed there, but it had so many condiments. It was an embarrassment of condiments. And I would just go,
embarrassment of condiments.
It was an embarrassment. So
no, sometimes there's a place that'll have like the good salsa bar. So you go
the
there.
Salsa bar.
You're like, going to get the most options.
Yep.
Baja Fresh.
Yeah, Baja Fresh. But also Ricky's Fish Tacos, which is the best fish taco truck. And then you get, you're like, I want this one, but then this one's also good. You could just have them all. You could have it all.
I got two kinds of salsa yesterday from Huaraches Azteca, which I also endorse. And Who Goes Azteca, the best place in the world. And they just gave it to me in like giant cups, and I was so happy about it.
What kind of salsas?
A green and a red. But I also like almost drank it several times, and then I was like, what would be wrong with that?
Well, we know what would be wrong.
It's just a soup.
When you drink a sauce, you've been down that road, Molly. Don't make me remind you.
Well, that's just soy sauce. I'm just not allowed to drink soy sauce in great quantities anymore.
That's the other thing. Having a soy-based sauce and then making a kind of like all of these different iterations of the soy. Like now you have the soy.
You like to doctor the sauce.
You doctor the sauce. Call me Dr. Sauce.
Well, we always talk about Dr. John on Top Chef when they had the hot sauce making competition, and his number one thing that he was like, what I'm looking for is a hip tang.
We talk about it all the time tang. Because it is exactly,
it
describes something so well. It's like a Dr. John is like a language.
You'll know it when you taste it.
There's no translation.
If it's got that hip tang or not.
That's why Crystal hot sauce is the superior hot sauce.
Yeah. Crystal, endorse Night Call.
Oh, please, Crystal. We love you.
Yeah, I love Crystal. Vinegar hot sauce.
Yeah, vinegar-based.
Also, I will say to Night Callers interested in getting into making your own hot sauce, it's very easy, I learned.
Did you make a hot sauce?
I made like a salsa and a hot sauce. Yeah, you just like boil some peppers with vinegar.
Doesn't it hurt your eyes and your lungs when you're boiling it?
Not if you're not, like, standing right over it.
Oh, see, I hover. That's too dangerous for me.
Let's each rank our top three. Top three sauce.
Oh, it's so hard.
Okay. Well, I'll name one right now. I love a honey mustard, either dipping sauce or dressing. It is my favorite.
My favorite flav.
It's very good.
I like the Ken's honey mustard. If I had to choose one single sauce, it would be ponzu. But if I got two, it would be ponzu and tartar sauce, but never together. Never together. I'm not crazy.
I feel like soy sauce has to be number one. If I could only choose one for the rest of my life.
But remember when you were used to soy sauce and then you had ponzu?
I like ponzu, but
ponzu's got the hip tang.
Regular soy sauce, so good. Second might be malt vinegar.
Oh, you're crazy.
I love malt vinegar.
I mean, I love them, but I love your two sauces are like the darkest, most watery sauces.
Well, maybe the second one is like mustard, if mustard counts as a sauce.
Mustard counts as a sauce, right?
Yeah, totally.
Well, what kind of mustard?
But Emily said honey mustard, so I didn't want to steal her mustard veiler.
The honey mustard dressing is like a combination of things.
Emily, what's
like
the best?
I like a sweet
honey
and sour
mustard.
Also.
I have no idea, but it's one that they have at the diner that I was just at that's like pale yellow.
I wonder
it's
if
like
it's
opaque.
Ken's. Do you think it's Ken's?
I don't know. Is the Ken's one have a grain in it? Because
the one in the tiny tub does. The one in the squeeze bottle doesn't.
Because it is just like a plain yellow colored sauce.
Kind of heavy on the honey.
Yes.
We're going to have to make a Night
sweet.
Call sauce now.
Oh, can we please?
That would be amazing.
That would be awesome.
You know what it's going to be, though? It's going to end up being a remoulade.
Oh, well, I mean, remoulade's so good.
It combines all the things we like.
Wait, when we DJ, should we bring a Night Call sauce Molly brought pie last time.
Yeah, maybe I'll make some sauce.
Let's make sauces.
My other sauce that I would choose is going to be controversial, but it's because it's a mayonnaise, but it's Kewpie mayonnaise.
I respect your commitment to
Kewpie
mayonnaise.
We all decided that Kewpie mayonnaise is the creme de la mayonnaise.
Oh, now I'm going to barf. A lot of things make me barf, so don't even take your personal.
What a lovely museum we've created to our favorite things. I picture us walking down the halls.
Yeah,
we have the
Hallowed
Moon
Halls
and Angela Lansbury and some
some sauce.
We're riding those bicycles with one giant wheel in the front.
Yeah.
We definitely need to have those audio guides where you hold up the thing to your ear, the like little stick, and it tells you facts about each thing.
Please, heavy on the facts today, but facts don't. This was a feelings hall of fame.
It was the museum of Jurassic Night Callery.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. So I have a late entry that almost made my list because I saw it today. It's a movie. It's another movie. And I immediately texted Molly and Tess and said that it was perhaps Night Call's movie of the year. And that is the movie Aquaman, which is incredible. I feel like has all of our favorite things in it, including octopi.
I was saying this ties in perfectly with my plan to make the cool new catchphrase, "It's wet."
I wish the catchphrase for Aquaman was "get wet."
Well, after
just like a picture of Jason Momoa.
After Iris said that thing about First Man being about a guy who wants to fuck the moon, and I was like, Aquaman looks like it's about a guy who fucks the ocean,
who fucks the sea.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And that is, I guess, what it's about. It sounds like,
well, riding the sea creatures. I mean, come on.
Well, Emily just texted Tess and I, and her cell, which was very good, was Willem Dafoe riding a seahorse.
Yeah,
who doesn't want that? From a big blockbuster. Apparently it's doing very well in China, and it does feel like one of those movies that's like engineered to do really well in China, but like I can't, like it's engineered to do really well in my heart too. It's so wacky. Looks like a blacklight poster. It's so great.
We love a sea kingdom.
It's true.
We love a wacky sea kingdom.
It kind of sounds like a deviant art, like fan art thing come to life where you're just like, what if this? Oh, look, it exists. What if this? Oh, here you go.
You know, I feel like a lot of the stuff about dark, gritty superhero movies has like robbed superhero movies of what would make them fun, which is like being very weird.
Yeah.
So it seems like the weirdness is coming back, and not just in a Deadpool like zingery way, but maybe in like a Willem Dafoe riding a seahorse way, which is all I really want.
Just Patrick Wilson's also in it, and he wears like a mer cape.
You said something else about like Nicole Kidman and crabs, just like
my god, Nicole Kidman is wearing like a crab arm as like armor at one point, and then like throws it off, and you realize that it was like a crab arm, and I just like started laughing out loud. I was so happy.
Oh, sounds great. Sounds like a weird George Melies
anyway
thing.
Yeah.
Listeners, if you have any recommendations for the Night Call Hall of Fame, you should give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT.
Or an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at nightcallpod, on Facebook at nightcallpodcast, or on Instagram at nightcallpodcast.
And we plan on doing this every year as long as we're around. So, and we'll also link to some kind of virtual place where all of our Hall of Fame picks can live. And maybe like, I would love to have like one of those old guest books, like an Angel Fire site, where people can write their comments and tributes to each of our picks. So we'll figure out a way to get that up off the ground. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. Oh, wait, I have one last thing. I'm just going to make a wish right now on the podcast. I didn't get permission from Emily or Molly, but I'm doing it anyway. So I've noticed that there has been some kind of campaign to get Oh Hello to host the Oscars. And I need to put it out onto somewhere that I just need that to happen. And so just send good vibes, because that's the only way the Oscars.
It's the only way they could redeem it at this point.
It's the only redemption. So that is my wish for all of us for the new year.
I'm right there with you. Oh my God, that would be the best.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.